For the Dallas Morning News, I'm Christopher Wynn. This is a special audio report, Reckoning with Joppy. For generations, Dallas has abused, terrorized, and neglected a community built by emancipated slaves.
New at 6, Dallas neighbors on the other side of the tracks are fighting a new concrete mixing plant right near the historic Freedmanstown neighborhood of Joppy.
This is not something that other communities in the city of Dallas have to deal with.
The Inclusive Communities Project won big fair housing changes from Dallas. It's joined Joppy residents for this fight.
Over and over, they get things imposed on them. Nobody stops to really truly ask them what they want or how they feel about it.
Well, it's one of the last of the freedmen's towns. You know, it has survived slavery, it survived Jim Crow, it survived segregation, and it is still there today.
Joppy's story is the history of race in Dallas and America.
Hi, I'm Mark Lamster. I'm the architecture critic of the Dallas Morning News and also a professor in the architecture school at the University of Texas at Arlington.
Mark Lamster writes not only about signature works of architecture, he also chronicles how the places we build define who we are and affect how we live our lives every day. About 3 years ago, he told me that he wanted to write about Joppy.
I actually think that my interest in Joppy dated back before that to just after I arrived in Dallas 7 years ago to take this job as architecture critic. And I heard about this small town within Dallas, this what we call a freedman's town or freeman's colony. It's basically a town founded by emancipated slaves after the Civil War. And I kind of became interested in this isolated place, and it's very isolated. It's about 6 miles south of downtown Dallas, but it's caught between railroad tracks and the wetlands of the Trinity Forest, the floodplain. And it's kind of hidden and isolated and cut off from the rest of the city down there. And it has been since its founding in 1872. And I just became interested in the life of this place and how it had existed for so long and started trying to make trips there and not wanting to just go and write a single story about one or two things happening there at one time, but to try and get a holistic idea of the community.
So, Mark, it's interesting you talk about the isolation in this community. And it's hard for many of us to imagine, I think, living in the Metroplex in North Texas because it's so congested, it's so busy. And I'm intrigued that part of that is that there really is only one practical way in and out of this town. Tell me about the bridge.
Right. Well, for many years, the community felt like it needed better access out and into and out of Joppy because the community's hemmed in by the Union Pacific Railroad tracks. And this was deeply problematic because if there was a train blocking the crossing, there was no way to get in or out, and there were trains often blocking the crossing. This was both an inconvenience, but also a deep hazard if emergency service vehicles for any reason needed to get into the community. So for many years, the community lobbied to have some kind of bridge built. And the city rejected this because poor small Joppy was too small a fish. But eventually the city did cave and build a bridge. The problem was the bridge it built over the tracks was 2 lanes only with absolutely no accommodation for pedestrians, for cyclists. So it's an extremely dangerous bridge to cross unless you're in a car.
So, Mark, speaking of the bridge, you worked on this assignment with Linda Gonzalez. She's a visual journalist here at the Dallas Morning News. Linda, you were photographing the bridge, and you actually met a very interesting character there, Peter Rabbit. Can you tell me about Peter?
Peter Rabbit was actually the very first person I met in Joppy. I noticed a horse by the entrance where the Welcome to Joppy sign is when you first cross the bridge. And I saw this horse, and so I get out, and I'm taking a picture of this horse with the sign, and I'm trying to make a picture. And out of nowhere, I hear this man's voice over my shoulder, and he's like, "That's my horse." And it's Peter Rabbit. And this horse doesn't have any kind of reins on it. It doesn't have a saddle. It is just a horse that's just kind of roaming Joppy. And he said it's not really his horse. It was a friend's horse, and he's taken after it. And, you know, I was like, "Well, hello, nice to meet you. What's your name?" And he said he goes by Peter Rabbit. His story is interesting in the sense that he's one of those pedestrians who doesn't have a car. He doesn't have a driver's license either. And so he definitely does rely on a bicycle to get to and from Joppy. And he has to be careful about when he goes over that bridge because there is no visibility of cars coming over it until you're at the top of it. And so I think it was fortunate to meet him because he was able to kind of illustrate that very specific point in Mark's story about pedestrian traffic kind of being stranded in Joppy.
It's interesting. We talk about the history of Joppy, which is both very special and very wonderful, and it's also very complicated. There is some dark history there as well that has shaped this community. Mark, tell us about some of Joppy's history and how it got to where it is today.
The idea of white supremacy is built into the very fabric of the city, and that's why it is where it is. Joppy was founded by an emancipated slave named Henry Critz Hines, who had worked on the plantation of William B. Miller, which was right across the train tracks from where Joppy was founded. Miller was the person, really, who brought the train to Dallas. It's what made Dallas a modern city. It allowed it to grow the way it grew. But the area that the emancipated slaves were allowed to build on was literally on the other side of the tracks, between those tracks and the Trinity and the Trinity's floodplain. So it was the flooded area. This was the bottom land. The benefit of it was that it was sort of protected and out of sight. And there were other freedmen's colonies throughout the city where African Americans were allowed to build. Deep Ellum, State Thomas, Elm Thicket, etc. There were around. Joppy was among the most self-contained and still exists pretty much as it was. So over the course of its history, its isolation both protected it, but it allowed it to be abused. In the 20s, it became a place where the Klan would bring those it decided needed whippings. There was a tree that is notorious for being the whipping tree of the Klan. It's sort of terrifying. And over decades, there were just case after case of, the kinds of discrimination against African Americans that, came home to roost in Joppy.
Linda, you actually went out and found what we believe to be one of those whipping trees. And I wonder if you can tell me about that experience, because I know it was intense to get out there.
Joppy is absolutely breathtaking at dawn. The reserve behind it is a phenomenal place to see the sunset and the sunrise. And it's just right next to the best nature that the Dallas area has to offer. And it's about a 20-minute trek out to this tree. This tree, among many of the others in Joppy, is something that they refer to as witness trees because they've seen so much. And it's dark and it's cold, and you're coming from this space like you just trekked through the forest that was warm and sunny and glowing, and then it's just this really dark thicket in the middle of it, and it had all of this new growth. There's very much the sense that the forest is reclaiming it for itself. It's not the thing that it once was, and it doesn't signify the thing that it once meant for the community of Joppy. It is something that is part of its history. It still exists, but I love this idea that the forest and nature reclaims it for herself. It was a very incredible experience to get to go out there and see it.
Mark, when you were exploring the history of Joppy, I know you got some great help from Donald Payton. Tell us about Donald.
Well, one of the things about writing about the history of Joppy is that there is no history of Joppy written. There's no book where you just go to and you say, "Oh, I'd like to find out about the history of Joppy, so I'm just going to open this book and go and do it." Writing about it meant a lot of interviews and talking to people. And one of the great pleasures of doing the story was getting to know Donald Payton.
One of the founders of Dallas County, a man named William Brown Miller, he brought my family to Dallas in 1847. We're in the Miller family cemetery. So a lot of these people are the descendants of the people who settled Joppy.
Donald is the sort of unofficial historian of Joppy, and he's knows its history and has collected an amazing assortment of documentary photographs and stories from the press. So a lot of the joy of doing the story is sort of working with people like Donald, with going back through archives, our archives at the Dallas Morning News, and to sort of recover this story of Joppy, learning the history from the people who lived it. It's very much a live story.
Well, I think it's a community of survivors. People in Joppy have learned to survive up until just a matter of a few years ago, without running water, without a really functional school system. This is ancestor land. And, you know, these are the people that I know that one day I might have to meet. And I don't want them to know that I ignored their contributions and their work. I don't want to be the person who they say, well, son, you had a chance to call our name and you had a chance to tell our story and you never did. Why not?
Linda, you mentioned Shalandria and Tamika. And in a way, they each represent sort of old Joppy and new Joppy. And I wonder if you could talk about that.
Well, Shalandria's family has long ties to Joppy. She lives in the home that her great-grandmother built by hand and over years. Shalandria has raised her children in Joppy. She was raised in Joppy, and she really does represent someone who cares so much about the history of Joppy and the families that have been there for so long.
What I'm trying to say is we're five generations. So generations 3, 4, and 5 are still alive. I do have a picture with all five generations. We knew what a Habitat home would be. And when they came in, they're like, oh, okay, those are nice. And one, I will give Habitat credit with the older homes. Mm-hmm. They did come in and do a lot of brush with kindness. Mm-hmm. So it would actually look, you know, you wouldn't be right next to a home with a hole in the roof or in the door or whatever. So they did do their due diligence. And like I said, it's very diverse now because we have Asians, Hispanics, African-Americans. Mm-hmm. It's everybody, but you don't want it to be an all African-American. That's not what we're saying. We just want to preserve the history mm-hmm. and don't come and disrespect what it was made of, you know what I'm saying, and how it was built, and just, you know, just take it away. That's not acceptable, so.
Tamika, on the other hand, moved into the neighborhood with the help of Habitat for Humanity, and one of her main focuses is improving the environmental conditions of the neighborhood. She's very concerned about the quality of air in Joppy. She definitely represents a new group of families that are moving into Joppy who are able to afford homes through the help of Habitat for Humanity, and represent a changing demographic that's also coming in. And so Tamika doesn't have generational ties to Joppy. She doesn't have great-grandmothers and great-grandfathers who've lived there and who built homes there. But she cares deeply about Joppy because it's her home.
We need to be aware of our surroundings because they are killing us. How can they say the cloud of dust and the chemicals we smell and everything is not going to affect us if we ingest it over and over and over and over again. So, but majority of the community wanted to stop. And for a long time, they didn't never have no one to stand up and take the force of it and be consistent with it. And I think that's where I stepped in at. I'm just trying to empower people, and that's my mission, just to empower them to start being more. This community is too small to have so much drama.
You know, Mark, the problems today have not gone away, and in some way they've just changed and become even more complicated.
About 15 years ago, or 20 years ago now almost, when Habitat came into the community, Joppy was completely dilapidated when Habitat arrived. There were only roughly 300 houses, and half of them were completely in disrepair. And Habitat was instrumental in bringing the community back. It's built more than 100 houses. It's helped repair many of the houses that were there. The issue is that Habitat really just built houses and didn't do any, there was no community center, didn't bring any, think about retail. It was Habitat, what Habitat does is build houses. So they built houses and that's it. And Habitat also screens very carefully for the people it sells its houses to. And of course, it's equal opportunity. And that meant a change in demographics from what was this entirely African-American community was now changing, which is not bad at all, but it's a change for this community. And the Habitat new owners care very much about the community, but they, as Linda suggested, they have a different relationship to it than those who have been there for a very long time. And that inevitably has led to some friction. It's led to friction over what's going to happen, relationships with Habitat, and it's led to friction especially over environmental issues associated with the industrial uses, the concrete, the trains, etc. And I think that has really pitted the community against itself. So I think there's some good news now, which is that we can report that a new nonprofit consortium has installed air monitors in Joppy. So for the first time, really, we're going to be getting real data about the environmental impacts of all of these industrial uses on Joppy. So that's a really positive development. But I mean, there is a concern about gentrification. I mean, houses that only a few years ago had been going for $50,000 are now going for $200,000, $175,000 in Joppy. So I think there's very much a sense that gentrification is an issue for this neighborhood that it's now looking to confront.
What is clear in the story and in your photographs, especially Linda, is the amazing sense of pride that this community has. And I loved it especially in that photograph of the marching band. And I wonder if you can tell me about that.
Yes, the marching band photo came from a day that was organized by Shalandria Gallimore and the South Central Civic League. And that event was so special. It was actually the first event that I was able to go back out and photograph once the pandemic had kind of settled down enough to have gatherings. And Shalandria and the South Central Civic League gathered and decided we're going to throw our own celebration for our local Joppy high school graduating seniors. And so they got a brass band that plays music from New Orleans to come in and march down the streets of Joppy. And they were having a grand old time playing all sorts of music. And what was so special is that out of the roughly 10 graduating seniors in Joppy, only 5 showed up. And you have this like mini parade for 5 seniors who aren't even students of the same school. They all go to a separate, different high school, and this is the future of Joppy. It is these 5 students. It's this handful of graduating seniors, and to see the community in Joppy rally around that was so special. And this is the part that I think kind of was full circle in photographing the whipping tree and then photographing this event. Because in this event, they gathered under a very tall tree when you first drive into Joppy, right next to that Welcome to Joppy sign. And they're having this really humble and modest gathering under this very tall tree. And it's kind of another way of looking at how Joppy reclaims what the trees in their community mean to them and how they use their own space for themselves. And so they're having this party underneath the tree. They're like throwing confetti bombs at their seniors, And then they surprise them at the end with $500 scholarships. And each student got one, didn't know they were going to receive that. And it meant so much to these families to know that they're being taken care of by their own.
It's interesting what you guys have described is a community that really is, in lots of ways, having an identity crisis. Who will this community become? You know, will they recognize themselves? And how will this end up? What do you think will happen in Joppy? And especially as we think about it in this moment of 2020, in a year of the Black Lives Matter protest, when there are so many sort of former freedmen's towns like this, what do you think will happen to this one, and what should we be doing?
It's hard to speculate because I don't want the cynic in me to look at the beautiful treasure that Joppy is. It's a place that has like such wonderful natural vegetation around it. It has beautiful trees. It's shaded. It has this nice small countryside feel to it. And it's hard to see that and not think that someone's just going to come and take it over and trample on it and rebuild it and develop it and turn it into a subdivision. I don't want that to be the future of Joppy. I don't think that the residents want that either for themselves. But I think that they are empowered to advocate for themselves, that they are galvanizing to advocate for what they want for the community. They want a community center. They want development to come in, but in a way that empowers local residents, in a way that benefits them. They want there to be a grocery store. They want there to be small businesses that operate out of Joppy. I think that is probably something that could potentially happen, considering how hard the people and the advocates of Joppy are working for that kind of future for themselves.
One of the joys of being a critic is that you get to talk about what you see and not what might happen in the future. I'm not much of a futurist and don't trust those who are, so I can't really tell what the future of Joppy is going to be, although I'm interested to continue to watch. But I think your question was, what can we do for Joppy? And I think the answer is, it's not our job to do things there. It's our job to listen to the city's job, to listen to the people of Joppy and respond to their needs the best we can, or the best the city can, in a respectful way. And I don't think there's a long history of that happening. And as Linda indicated, I think, you know, the people of Joppy are going to come together and are starting to figure out, you know, what the things are that they want and what can be done, what will helpful, whether it's, you know, stores or pop-up, you know, job fairs or mobility issue, you know, better mobility. There will eventually be a pedestrian bridge over the tracks there. So I think the question for us isn't, you know, what we can do for Joppy, but listening to Joppy so they can and tell us what they want, and then working with them to make that happen.
Mark, Linda, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can read the full story on Joppy and see photos at dallasnews.com/Joppy. And that's spelled J-O-P-P-A. This audio report was produced by Christopher Wynn, Marcia Alert, and Christian Vasquez. Special thanks to Michael Hamptel, Ashley Robinson, and Carla Solorzano, and our partners at NBC5. Please help support our journalism and projects like this one by becoming a member of the Dallas Morning News. You'll find an exclusive offer for listeners at dallasnews.com/audio.